We'll read verse 1 again. I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. And the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon tables or tablets, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Behold, his soul which is lifted up or puffed up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith or by his faithfulness. The following section deals with five woes. We won't read the whole section, but the middle of verse 6, woe to him that increaseth that which is not his. Verse 9, woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house. Verse 12, woe to him that buildeth a town with blood and establisheth a city by iniquity. Verse 15, woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink. Verse 19, woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. And so may the Lord bless the reading of his word to all our hearts. Now, Brother John was right in relating chapter 1 to the previous chapter. I think verse 1 of chapter 2 is rather an overlapping verse. It relates to what has gone before, but it also prepares us for what is to follow. And so verse 1 is that connecting link between the excellent ministry that we have heard from our brother John, as he has laid a good foundation, and the ministry that stretches out before us in chapter 2 and in chapter 3. I believe that the book of Habakkuk is built upon two pillars upon which there rests not only the great temple of truth in the prophecy of Habakkuk, but two pillars upon which the great temple of truth from Genesis to Revelation rests. The one pillar is in chapter 1, emphasized by our brother John in verse 12, and the other pillar is in chapter 2 and verse 2, 3 and 4. The first pillar is that the eternal character of God has been made known. And the second pillar in chapter 2, the scroll of human history revealed. My brother, my sister, upon those two great pillars, the great temple of truth rests. Our brother has reminded us of the wonder of the eternal character of God. The Chaldeans were but yesterday, and they will be gone tomorrow. But the great maxim of life is surely introduced in that verse. Be sure of what you believe. And the prophet says, art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, we shall not die. My brother, my sister, I believe that's a great and profound truth to grasp. The wonder of the eternal character of God that brings to the heart deep conviction in days of uncertainty. And the prophet adds, we shall not die. And in chapter 2 we shall see, in relation to these words, he says, the just shall live by faith. We shall not die. The just shall live by faith. That is the one great pillar. The eternal character of God made known. And then in chapter 2 that we'll consider and on into chapter 3 tomorrow night, it is the wonder of the scroll of human history revealed. That is why the prophet goes up to his watchtower, that he might prepare himself for a rebuke by God. We have considered, haven't we, in chapter 1, the perplexities of the prophet, the purpose of God, the problem of the prophet, and now we are coming to the promises of God. Now this chapter, chapter 2, is divided probably into three sections. Verse 1 is a section by itself and closes that second dialogue in which the prophet speaks to God and God listens. And now in verse 1 of chapter 2, the prophet is preparing himself for God to talk, and he will be prepared to listen. And so verse 1 is a verse in itself, then verse 2 to 4, and then verse 5 to the end of the chapter. The key word in verse 1 is the word watch. And the interesting, perplexing problem of Habakkuk in verse 1 centers around the word, I will stand upon my watch. The key word in verse 2 to 4 is the word write. And the Lord answered me, write the vision. And the key word from verse 5 to the end of the chapter is the word woe. We read them to you five times over. Woe, woe, woe. So here we have the division of the chapter. And we think of those three words, watch, write, woe. In verse 1, we have the problem of Habakkuk. In verse 2 to verse 4, we have God's prophetic announcement. And that is the great, not only the key to Habakkuk, but one of the great keys to the unfolding of the scroll of human history. And then in verse 5 to the end, we have Habakkuk's pronouncements of the doom of Babylon. So then we have Habakkuk's problem. We have God's prophetic announcement, and we have the prophet's pronunciations of the doom of Babylon. And so in verse 1, the prophet says, I will stand upon my watch. Problem after problem had reached the prophet. In chapter 1, he is almost saying to God, do something about it. And God answers, I am doing something about it. I am raising up the Chaldean. I'm doing something about it. Don't put me in a corner. You're looking in the wrong direction. In chapter 2, he's again saying to God, in the light of these closing verses that our brother John brought before us, he's saying to God again, do something about it. And in chapter 2 and in chapter 3, God is saying, I will do something about it. So that in answer to the problem of chapter 1, God says, I am doing something about it. I'm raising up the Chaldeans. In chapter 2, the prophet is saying again, do something about it. And God says, I will do something about it. And that is the great key to the prophecy in verse 2 to verse 4. And so the prophet says, I will stand upon my watch. Up till now, I've looked out at the enemy. And I am perplexed. And problems are many and varied. Now I'm going to stand upon my watch. And I'm going to look up to God. And in patience I'm going to wait and see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. He expected that God would reprove him for his boldness and his lack of faith. And he wondered if God could have patience with a man with such perplexities and such problems. And he says, I'll just wait and see what God will say unto me and what I shall say in reply. And as he waited, then we have this great scroll of human history revealed in verse 2 to verse 4. And the key word is, the Lord answered me and said, write the vision. And so in this verse 2 to verse 4, we have an analysis of the scroll of human history, so cryptically and briefly brought together. In these verses, verse 2 to 4, first of all, the Lord would indicate we have a prophecy clearly written, clearly understood, and clearly related to others.
And that's why we read these words, "And the Lord answered me and said, write the vision, make it plain upon tables, that he may run that readeth it." In other words, says God to the prophet, let this prophecy be clearly written. Let it be clearly understood. And let it be clearly communicated to others. That's the gathering up of the interesting verse, write the vision. In other words, in these days, if the people of God had problems, they would go and knock at the prophet's door. And they would say to the prophet, have you a word from the Lord? And God says to the prophet, when the people come and knock your door, just take a tablet and write what I'm going to say. And if you like, nail it to the door, so that he that comes, and he that reads, and he that understands, will run and tell and communicate the message to others. Thus, very briefly, there is brought before us here, in this first section of verse 2, the prophecy had to be clearly written. It had to be clearly understood. It had to be clearly communicated to others. My brother, my sister, let me say, the subject of prophecy is a very important subject in the Word of God. It has been clearly written. Let it be clearly understood. And let it be clearly communicated to others. The message, of course, in its narrow limits in chapter 2, was the ultimate destruction of Babylon. The power of Assyria had fallen as the power of the Chaldeans was raised up. And the book of Nahum indicates that to us, how God raised up the power of Babylon to destroy the power of Assyria, whose capital was Nineveh. And that's why the prophet Nahum in chapter 1 speaks about the feet of them that bring glad tidings. These were not glad tidings of good news in the gospel. These were the glad tidings that the power of the enemy had been broken. And now the power of the Chaldees has been raised up. And the prophet reminds God of the awful sin and violence of that nation. And God says to the prophet, write this vision. Make it clear upon tablets of stone, that when the remnant come for a message from the Lord, they'll see what's written, they'll understand it, and they'll go and tell the glad news that the power and doom of Babylon will be imminent. Just as Babylon destroyed the power of Assyria, so the Medo-Persians would be raised up to destroy the power of Babylon. But these verses not only look to the immediate future, but I believe these verses go right on to the end times. And when we consider the intimation of this prophecy in verse 2 to 4, and the five woes that follows, we clearly understand that God is not just thinking of the doom of Babylon in the immediate future, but the ultimate doom of Babylon in the end times. And so he says to the prophet, write the vision, make it plain, that he may run that readeth it. In other words, make the vision plain. And then secondly, there will be a period of interval between. In other words, between the going forth of the prophecy and its ultimate fulfillment, there will be a delay. And God says to the prophet regarding that delay, he says the vision is for an appointed time. And then he adds at the end of the verse, though it tarry, wait for it, it will surely come. In other words, says God to the prophet, make the vision clear, but remind the people that there will be an unfulfilled period between the going forth of the prophecy and its ultimate conclusion. So that in this brief prophecy, there is, first of all, the prophecy made clear. And then there is the period of delay between the going forth of the prophecy and its ultimate and certain fulfillment. And then there is brought before us the ultimate fulfillment of the prophecy. In verse 3 he says, but at the end it shall speak. And then he says, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. And so here we have the certainty of God's communication to his people in that day through the prophet. And I'm sure it has a message for you and I today. The great prophecy clearly revealed the indeterminate delay between its going forth and its ultimate fulfillment. And then, says God, between its going forth and between its ultimate fulfillment, two things will happen, and that's where we come to verse 4. For I believe that verse 4, in many respects, is the guide to chapter 2 and chapter 3. Verse 4 has two statements. Behold, his soul, which is lifted up or puffed up with pride, is not upright in him. And then secondly, but the just shall live by his faith. So that during that interval, between the clear declaration of the prophecy and its ultimate fulfillment, two things will happen. There will be those who will ripen themselves for judgment. His soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him. And the second thing that will happen is this, that during that period, the just shall live by his faithfulness. And so during that the seasons of testing, the seasons when there will be an unavoidable delay, the prophet says, two things will happen. The unjust will ripen themselves for judgment, and the just shall live by his faith. Now, when we come from verse 5 to the end of the chapter, we have introduced for us a further declaration of the first statement of verse 4, his soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him. This is God's judgment upon the power of the Chaldeans. Now that statement is made, and in verse 5 to the end of the chapter, there is a declaration of the grounds upon which this pride will be destroyed. So that the five woes of verse 5 to verse 20 is a clear description of the first statement of verse 4, his soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him. He is, imminent judgment is about to follow. But when we come to chapter 3, and we'll deal with that tomorrow night, in chapter 3, we have the secret of the second statement of verse 4, the just shall live by his faith. What is the secret of how the just can live and persevere in these days? Chapter 3 will give us the answer. So that chapter 2 is the answer to the first sentence of verse 4. His soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him. And chapter 3 will give us the answer to the second section. The just shall live by faith. How is this man in verse 4, this man whose soul is puffed up and is not upright within him? Then God takes away the covering and he reveals to us the sins that will justify the intervention of God in the ultimate doom of Babylon. And so there are five woes brought before us. Let me just briefly state them because we haven't time to develop them. The first sin is undoubtedly the sin of injustice. Woe to him, verse 6, that increaseth that which is not his. In other words, it is the sin of stealing. It is the sin of injustice. And God said, what marked the Chaldeans, and I've noted it, is this awful sin, the sin of injustice. There we have the outward side of the sin of the Chaldeans. And then when we come to the second, in verse 9, he says, woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness. In other words, if you look down verse 9, 10, and 11, you will find that if in the first it is the sin of injustice, In the second, it is the sin of impurity. If the first was the outward sin of injustice, the second was the inward sin of impurity. And so, step by step, the apostle goes down. When we come to the third in verse 12, woe to him that buildeth a town with blood, establisheth a city with iniquity. Here we have the sin of iniquity. And here we have the public side. He builds a town with blood. He establishes a city by iniquity. This great Babylon that I have built. But it is in that section. How important it is, and we wonder why it's there. That suddenly God says in verse 14, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar may talk about this great Babylon that I have built, the glory of the nations. But in contrast to that, the prophet says the earth shall be filled one day, not with the glory of Babylon, but with the glory of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea. And there it is the sin of iniquity. There it is the public sin. When we come to verse 15, woe to him that giveth his neighbour drink, and so on. There we have the sin of immorality. And if you look down those verses, you will see that Babylon was famed for its adultery, its immorality, its vileness, its pollution. And there we have its relationship, the one to the other. And then the final woe in verse 19. Woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, and to the stone, arise. Here we have the sin of idolatry. So that in those five woes, we have the sin of injustice, the sin of impurity, the sin of iniquity, the sin of immorality, and finally, the sin of idolatry. And when we reach that point, God can go no further with them. How beautiful this chapter ends. And my time has almost gone. Woe to him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise. It shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver. But there is no breath, there is no life at all in the midst of it. And he's contrasting the God of Israel with the gods of the surrounding nations. Oh, the costliness of those great idolatrous images. And they had to be carried about within chariots. Why? Because they were overlaid with gold and with silver. But God says, there is no life at all in the midst of them. Dead idols. And in that way, and again we shall find tomorrow evening, that just as verse 1 of chapter 2 is an overlapping verse relating what goes before with what follows, when we come to verse 20, we will find that verse 20 is an overlapping verse relating to what goes before and what will follow in chapter 3. And this is what the prophet says. And what a glorious climax, what a glorious conclusion to the doom of Babylon described and depicted for us. But, says the prophet, our God, the everlasting God, O Lord, as he says in 1 and 12, art thou not from everlasting? O Lord, not the God, not your God, my God, we shall not die. And now he says, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Let us remember these two great pillars, the one around which chapter 1 revolves. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, mine Holy One, thou we shall not die. And let us remember the scroll of human history revealed to us in chapter 2, climaxed with this, the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him.